Welcome to the Senia Happy Hour podcast with your host, Lori Bull. We know you're busy, so we bring you 1 hour's worth of content in under 30 minutes, leaving you time for a true happy hour.
Hello, everyone. Today, I got to speak with Kathleen Kriza, an outstanding international presenter, consultant, and author of 6 books for educators, who's committed to bringing best brain-based educational practices to schools and teachers so they can support and nurture their students. On today's podcast, Kathleen and I talk about executive functioning, mindset, skill set. She tells us why it's important to teach our students about how their brains work by being both intentional and transparent, and how this learning helps our kids succeed. Kathleen also shares some practical tips and strategies that you can start using right away in your homes or your classrooms. So let's get on to the show. Hi, Kathleen, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Lori. It's great to be here. I'm excited to talk with you today. I know we're both passionate about this topic.
We sure are. And you presented at our virtual conference in December, and those videos are still available till June. So if people haven't had a chance to see your talk, then hop right on and do that.
Yes, lots of good stuff in there. Lots of practical strategies. And it was a lot of fun being part of your conference, your amazing conference.
Oh, thanks. Well, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're an author of 6 books. So, well, first off, that's impressive. Second, one of those is entitled Transformative Teaching, Changing Today's Classrooms Culturally, Academically, and Emotionally. So from that description, this book examines the most effective strategies for leading diverse students in developing the skills they need inside and outside the classroom. By understanding and exploring students' emotional, cultural, and academic needs, educators will be better prepared to teach all students and help them become lifelong learners. So amazing description. Can you tell me what inspired you to write this book?
I started out as an English teacher and I had like 125 students and my first year of teaching, and it didn't take me long to realize that, you know, not everybody, first of all, loved the subject as much as I did, but also, you know, learned about language arts the way I did. So I found that I had kids that needed more challenge and I wasn't really sure how to do that for them. I had kids from different cultural backgrounds that I didn't understand their backgrounds. And I, had kids that were struggling. And so I started thinking, you know, if I'm going to teach kids that are all so different, I need to understand how brains work. So way back when, I started studying the brain and how do we understand the implications for what we're learning about the brain and its impact on teaching. And then, you know, I've been presenting at schools around the world for 30 years now and been in a lot of classrooms. And then in my own instruction, I started to realize that there are certain practices that we can implement with kids that work for all kids, but socially, emotionally, culturally, academically. Because when I was that English teacher, I was overwhelmed. I thought, well, I've got to do something different for every one of these kids. You know, I'm an English teacher.
Right.
And as much as I love these kids, I don't know how to do something different for all of them while I'm also trying to teach kids and manage kids. So I in all the years that I worked, my colleagues, Marianne Brittingham, an amazing educator and presenter, and Alicia Duncan, who has she passed away, unfortunately, but had an amazing background in culturally working with kids. And Marianne was the social emotional. So we sat down together for hours and hours and said, we should help teacher realize what these things are that work for all kids. And what we found were 6 things that if you put them in place foundationally in your classroom instruction, then because they work for all kids, you have to nuance less for the kids that have particular needs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. It's like
created a foundation for learning and building executive function. So I know you probably want to know what those six foundations are.
Absolutely.
So they are growth mindsets, mm-hmm. Creating a safe classroom and safe environment, having routines and procedures for working independently and interdependently, mindfulness, student talk, and student self-assessment. So if we build those things into what we do in our daily instruction, and it's what we kind of live by as educators, we will see kids that feel more engaged and more like they belong and like they're building tools that are lifelong tools, not just covering the curriculum. And I call it GFT, good frigging teaching.
I love that.
They are. They're just practical ways that we understand how the brain works. And so it's not rocket science, but it is good friggin' teaching. And the way we teach it makes a difference in our instruction. And in the book, we go over each of those six foundations and we show you the neuroscience behind it. Mm-hmm. And then why it works, what we know about it, and then strategies for cultural, emotional, and academic implications. Yeah.
GFT. Well, yeah. It is interesting. You say it's not rocket science, and yet so many people forget the relationship building or the, you know, time to take out of the daily schedule for just that mindfulness piece. So
yeah, I think it feels like it's a lot more, but it's been my experience that when I weave it in, like it's not separate. None of these things are separate. Mm-hmm. They're a part of the foundation of our instruction. And when we see, so if I want kids to collaborate, work interdependently, for example, I have to at first teach them how to do that.
Right.
And, you know, it's, but at the beginning, I call a lot of it go slow to go fast. Hmm. So if I build it in very intentionally and transparently into the way I work with kids, then it becomes a normal part for our kids to self-assess, to know how to work interdependently, to think about their mindsets. But it's always woven in. I say that in the 21st century, teaching kids how to learn and think is as important as teaching them what to learn and think.
Exactly.
So, and we give them the lifelong gift when we weave these in.
Yeah. Well, you also, speaking of the lifelong gift, you've mentioned skills necessary inside and outside of the classroom. And of course, executive functioning comes into play there. So can you tell me more about your formula of executive function?
Yeah, I came up with the formula that I call mindsets plus skill sets equals results. And I came up with that. I heard Carol Dweck speak many, many years ago, probably 12 or 13 years ago, at a conference that I was also speaking at. And when I heard her, I thought, this is really big. This is really important. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Dweck's research and others' research over the years, you know that teaching kids that words can change the chemistry of your brain, that the way we speak to ourselves changes the neuroplasticity, and that a single negative word can trigger the amygdala in our brains, and a single positive word can actually help develop our prefrontal cortex to be wired to saying, you know, yes, I can. And I love Ellen Lang. A lot of times when we think of mindsets, teachers will say, I can't yet, and they'll teach kids that. But I love Ellen Langer, and she says, not I can't, but how can I? Mm. How can I is the skill set part. So you know, first we're saying, I can, if I believe in myself, if I do this, Dweck initially focused on saying, you know, what do we say to ourselves? And we have a growth mindset and we believe that we can, and we know that we can change the chemistry of our brain. And I thought that's all important, but the special educator that I am started thinking about the kids that I've worked with, and I'm like, that's not enough for them.
Right.
Because they need to have the metacognitive skill sets as well. So you can say, yes, I believe myself, but if you don't know how to tackle, you know, the problem or the issue that you're working with, then you're not using your prefrontal cortex to its full capacity. So I've been saying that for years and years. And then I met Jack Naglieri, Dr. Jack Naglieri, and full disclosure, I ended up marrying him at a Learning in the Brain conference. I didn't marry him there, but that's right. And his research, the first time I heard him speak, like Dweck, blew me away. And I went, this is what I've been saying. Mm-hmm. And what he looked at in his research with Jackie Eisman, they took they had 13 days with kids in a school, a lab school in Washington, D.C. They all were ADHD and learning disabled, LD, every kid. And Jackie went in for 13 days. And what she did was a study where half of the kids, both groups of kids were taught a concept by their math teacher. And then half of the kids got more traditional instruction from the math teacher that they worked with. And then the other math teachers were taught something called planning facilitation, which again is not rocket science, but the impact was huge because all that she did was the teachers that worked with this planning facilitation did was ask questions. So instead of giving the kids more instruction or more of the same instruction, they asked simple questions. The kids got to think about them within groups, such as how did you tackle this problem? If you didn't get it, what would you do differently? What else could you do? So that she asked them a series of questions, which really are metacognitive questions. Jack calls it planning facilitation. I call it, you know, using your executive function or metacognitive thinking. And what they saw after only 13 days of instruction using planning facilitation is that the kids that received that started doing better on their classes in math, on their assignments in math. They started doing better on their state tests and their standardized tests and the tests that they were using in their school district. And a year later, they were still outperforming the other students.
Wow.
That's huge. That's huge. And you can go to Jack's website and see the actual research. So I'll make sure that you have that information. And the research was replicated in with reading as well as math. And so I said, there it is. That is the skill set part that right. We have to teach them to be thinkers. And if you look at the research that shows from Dweck's work, that when we teach them about growth mindsets, they, you know, they improve in their thinking, especially kids from low socioeconomic backgrounds. And then you add Jack's research and many others.
Right.
I just saw Stuart Ablon speak at the Learning in the Brain conference. I was speaking in the same conference. And he said that the kids must be involved in the solutions. And that is the shift inside and outside the classroom. They have to be taught that they can change the chemistry of their brain, which is the mindset part, and they can change the sort of thinking part of their brain with building the metacognitive skill sets to think about their own thinking. And the research shows that that can be done. And that, to me, mindsets plus skill sets equals results. I call it the winning formula for hope. Because we put that in children's hands. You know, Right. You are not stuck. You know, the kids will think, I'm never going to be good at math. You know, I'm never going to be able to achieve anything different because this is who I am forever. And the beauty of this is it applies to us as well as adults.
Yeah.
We always shape our mindsets and our skill sets.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I was that math person, you know, from I think fourth grade on, I was told I was not a strong math student. And so I believe that about myself. And it's taking me years to understand that I can, in fact, do math. And now I'm, you know, running this organization where budgeting, finances, all of that is part of it. And I was so stressed at the beginning, but I was like, I can persevere. I can get through this. And I have, you know, it's still not my favorite, but, sure. but I feel much better, more accomplished, right? Because
right. Yeah. And imagine if you had learned this when you were a kid, right?
Yeah.
That you had learned that, you know, there's no such thing as a, you know, we, Joe Baylor's work on mathematical mindsets is just incredible. And it's not true that you can't, you know, if you, that there's people who don't have math brains, basically.
Right.
But it's, again, our mindsets around it and then learning strategies, and that there's more than one way to solve a math problem. I wish I'd learned that.
Oh, I know. I watched the way our kindergartners and first graders are learning math now. And I'm like, oh, this makes so much sense.
I know. When I see amazing math teachers now, I'm like, I almost get choked up.
I know.
If I had had a teacher like that. So, you know, and the teachers I see all over the world just rocking this, you know, are the teachers that know that they have the power to create classrooms where they develop kids' mindsets and skill sets. And most of them will say, you know what, I'm going to go home and change the things I do as a parent as well.
Right. Yeah.
It's powerful.
Yeah. And, you know, it is important to teach our students as well, you know, the mindfulness, the executive functions. How do we teach them to understand how their brains work? Do you have any tips on that?
Yeah, lots of them. I think this is the key. I think this is where the change all happens. And I call it being intentional and transparent with kids. So intentionally, we are listening to podcasts like this or attending your amazing conference, and we're learning about the best things we know about how brains learn. And about instruction that impacts learning. So we bring that back to our parenting or our instruction. That's the intentional part. We are going to use it, but where you change everything, the game changer is when you become transparent. And when, so intentional is, you know why you're doing what you're doing. Transparent is the kids know why you're doing what you're doing. Mm. So you actually teach them along the way why you're having them think about their mindsets. It's not just a cute thing to do. It's not like a rah-rah. We know, you say to the kids what I said to you, when you shape what you say to yourself, it changes the chemistry of your brain. And, you know, I have PowerPoints I use to teach the kids about it. And then teachers can keep that alive. You can't just talk about it once. You have to like live it. And same with parents. So I teach teachers to do Mindset Mondays and Feedback Fridays. Hmm. So every Monday, the teacher can show a video or read a quote or read about somebody in the paper or in a novel that has you know, demonstrated a growth mindset and talk about it. So it's only like a couple minutes on a Monday to sort of get your week off to a mindset Monday start. And again, as if the kids are old enough, they can start bringing in things. You can assign them to bring in a quote or a story, and they love it. If teachers say if they forget to do the Mindset Mondays, the kids bug them.
Of course.
Again, it's beautiful for you to do as well because it gets you all pumped up.
Yeah.
On Fridays, they self-assess. Now, you could do it more than Friday, but you know, it's nice and alliterative to say feedback. But the kids self-assess. So there's that self-assessment on what was my mindset and what could I do differently? What did I do that worked? What could I do differently? You could say that to kids every week, whether you're a parent, you know, or an educator. Regularly, we should be asking, you know, how did that work for you? Mm-hmm. And if it didn't work, what could you do differently? But don't tell them. Ask, don't tell.
Yeah.
And that sounds simple, but it's not how we were taught or how we were raised.
Right.
So a lot of the change, so the kids need to know about their brain. I teach them that the prefrontal cortex is like the powerhouse of their brain. And I teach them, you can't see me, but what I teach them is I whap the front of my head, my prefrontal cortex, and that is, duh, I need a plan.
Ah, I love it.
So if it's not working, then duh, I need a plan. And I've taught this to teachers and kids in schools, but I've also taught it to my granddaughter and to a young lady I mentor. And I've been doing this for years. And my granddaughter she came to visit, and she came running down the stairs one morning, and she said, "Kathleen, you're going to be so proud of me. I used my prefrontal cortex this
time." And how old is she?
I said, she was like 8 at the time, 7 or 8. And I said, "What happened?" And she said, "Well, I forgot." We live by the water, and she loves the water. And she said, "I forgot to bring my shorts. And I was so disappointed because I wasn't going to be able to go splash in the water. But I used my prefrontal cortex. And I realized that if I rolled up my pants, I would be able to go and play in the water."
That's adorable.
The young lady I mentor, we talk about it all the time. And at first she didn't believe me. I actually had to show her, you know, some of the research. So I think, you know, reading kids books about it, their brains, is powerful. And showing them visibly on the screen, you can Google neural connections happening. And then it starts to become, the more transparent you are, the more concrete it becomes for kids.
Yeah.
And they love learning about their brains. You know, it's their brain.
It's really
fascinating.
I love it as well. I love teaching about this. And in it, one of my previous schools, I taught learning support in the middle school. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, brought that into my daily teaching. And they loved it. And they were like, "Why aren't our classmates learning about this?" So we tried to bring it into kind of the advisory program where it was built into the whole school structure.
Yeah.
And I know Peg Dawson spoke about that, about getting whole schools to teach about these skills. Just doing some lessons during the week, focusing on one skill. It's a whole school thing, so everyone's focused on it.
It's huge. That's the real key.
Yeah.
I'll give you this information as well. There's a school that Jack and I, my husband, worked in Northern Virginia, and it was a teacher-led initiative, which had an incredible power to teach kids about executive function. I believe they worked with Peg as well, actually.
Oh, is that EF in the classroom?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I use that all the time. Yeah.
Amazing, right?
Yeah, they have great lessons. I'll add that in.
They've made them free and accessible, EF in the classroom. They are secondary, but they were high school, but you could definitely use them through, I think you could modify them through Upper L, really through high school. And they have also recently put out social emotional lessons as well. I don't know if you know that.
No, I didn't. They're amazing.
And, you know, they ask for donations, but they give it to you all for free. And every teacher in the school has buy-in.
Yes, that's essential.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about strategies for students learning about their prefrontal cortex, executive functions. Do you also have some tips on how we can help them develop their mindsets and metacognition skills?
With the mindsets, the Mindset Mondays and feedback.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Really big. Okay. Yeah. I also have, and I can send this to you, I've been giving you a lot of resources here. You know, books, I think reading them, there's so many wonderful, every book you read will have a fixed mindset character.
Right.
Usually who develops a growth mindset, right? But there's wonderful books out there like Beautiful Oops, and I got many of them over on my shelf. I think it's The Girl Who Couldn't Make Mistakes, but I can send those to you. So reading books about the power of, for the older kids, I think Talent Code is just an amazing book. Most of us know, what's the other one? 10,000 Hours of Practice. Outliers.
Outliers, of course.
Yeah.
That's great.
Talent Code I like better because it weaves in understandable terms the neuroscience into, they studied hotbeds of talent. And where to, what were the things that were happening? And when I read it, it's like a lot of what I write about in my book, only teacher friendly, you know, ideas. And I think with skill sets, again, the biggest shift for me, and it seems easy, but it's hard, is learning to ask the metacognitive questions. Because we spoon feed so much as parents and as educators. So, and we teach kids that they can, that metacognitive thinking happens before and during and after learning. So we teach them what metacognition is, thinking about their own thinking. And then what are you thinking about before you start a learning task? What should you be thinking about? And then during learning, what are some things that you should use to monitor and adjust your thinking? And then afterwards, did what you do worked or do you need to try again? And so, I mean, just for example, as teachers, we tend to do things, and parents, let me tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Right? Here's exactly what you should do. And Lori, how would you reframe that, Lori? Can you think about
how?
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay,
instead of saying, this is what you have to do.
It's time to get ready for school. What are the things you need to do to get ready?
Yeah. Simple. And in the classroom, what do you need to do to do this task? So this is the before kind of questions that you can ask the same questions regularly because they don't get it at first. And we're used to giving up and telling them.
Right.
So you can't give up, especially with the kids who become learned helpless.
Right.
Very and then during the learning, we're like, oh, you can't do this? Let me show you what I do. Let me fix this for you. So, Lori. See, I'm being metacognitive.
I have to answer?
How you should do it. Let me help you.
Yeah.
What could you say?
So, I would say... So you're struggling with this right now. What is the first step you could take to try to solve this problem? Or what might you need to set up this problem?
Beautiful. What resources do you have available to for getting unstuck? You know,
right.
That's things like C3 before me, because they'll still be tugging on your dress or your suit coat when they're seniors. If we, eventually we cave.
Exactly.
But that's, you know, when they work in groups, they've got the group to support, you know, the C3 before me. Don't ask me. Talk to your group members. What resources do you have available? You know, because we give them, you know, they've got notes, they've got anchor charts on the walls. We've said the same thing a million times. They don't learn it and it doesn't transfer. When we start to ask them, they have to be involved in the solutions.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned anchor charts because I've seen it so many times and I've done it even in my own class. You've got these beautiful anchor charts up on the wall and the kids never refer to them.
Tell you what part of that problem is?
Yes.
The teachers make them, they like go on Pinterest and find them and copy them and make them all pretty. But they really need to co-created with the kids.
Right.
And kind of sloppy and not sloppy if you have good handwriting, but they have to evolve. So they shouldn't be a list of things all at once. They should show up as you learn them and practice them. And I've even put, if kids come up with the strategy, I put their initials next to it. I found this out the hard way.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Power of that. I had special ed kids and I'm like, so, you know, what did we learn about being writers this year? And they sat there and said nothing. So I taught them like so many, that they'd learned so many strategies. And I could feel my face turning red. And finally, I think a kid felt sorry for me. I remember his name was Bobby. And he said, well, I learned, you know, to think this way about my writing. And I was so excited. I wrote his name on the chart and then I put his initials on there. And everybody started cheering.
Uh-huh.
I had to see their initials. And then it was their chart.
Right.
So if we're not referring back to it and, you know, making it real and alive, then they're just nice things we hang on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They look all pretty.
Make your classroom look nice.
Yeah.
Well, Kathleen, I'm sorry to say that we're out of time because I think that we could talk for hours and everyone could learn so much from you. So
thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you. You're an amazing lady and thank you for all you do for kids all around the world.
Oh, well, thanks.
Thank you for joining us for today's show. For more information, including how to subscribe and show notes, please head to our website. That's senyainternational.org/podcasts. Until next time, cheers.